Welcome to the Shift Happens podcast, where we explore the latest trends and insights in the digital workplace. From the role of AI in the workplace to the future of remote work, we cover it all. Tune in as we chat with industry leaders and experts. Whether you're a seasoned pro or just getting started in the digital landscape, we've got you covered. Subscribe to Shift Happens wherever you listen to podcasts and stay ahead of the curve.
Shift Happens podcast.
Do you ever imagine living in a more digitized society? One where you don't have to go to your local school or library to vote, or endure long lines at the DMV? Today, I'm talking to Sim Sigurd, the former government CIO of Estonia, for a look at some small yet highly effective changes that make civic life easier and more effective. For more than 20 years, this country has leveraged technology to make the most of limited resources while quietly becoming one of the most digitally advanced nations in the world. What can we learn from Estonia's success? Pack your bags for an audio voyage and let's find out.
Shift Happens Podcast. Shift Happens Podcast.
Sim, welcome.
Thank you. And awesome to be here.
How are you doing these days? I know there's a lot of craziness going on and hopefully everybody's okay. Everything's going well in your part of the world.
Yeah, well, look, I think there's a mess in our part of the world in a way, right? Or in the whole of Europe, right? Because of all things happening in Ukraine. So obviously, Slava Ukraine, and keeping fingers crossed and helping from the sidelines as much as everybody can.
You know, one of the things that certainly that's transpiring with all this chaos, unfortunately, is in the realm of cyber warfare as well. I know security is top of mind for a lot of not just countries, but organizations today. And Estonia is one of the most digitally advanced countries in the world. So before we kind of jump into how this all started, what's the country thinking about? How are you all thinking about protection from more in the digital realm?
So our premise has always been in Estonia, as we started building up the whole digital country for about 20 years ago, then the premise has always been that we have to accept that there are risks of being digital, like you can be attacked, and we have to manage those risks. So that's what we started building up from early days on in terms of, you know, how to be cyber secure, in terms of how we designed systems, how we built up defenses, how we built alliances internationally for that. And it really paid off because we were the first country to be cyber attacked back in 2007. And so obviously all these things have been happening since and more. So my point being, we were never down. And so we really see that that's something you have to do. So cyber defense, cyber security is something we all have to invest in. It's like a hygiene factor we have to have in order to be digital in the first place. And so, and obviously, like in times like right now, when there's a whole mess going on, it's literally like, you know, part of warfare, then it's a different sort of game. And there you have it even more important that you have your capability in cyberspace to be as safe as you can. So again, it's another example of how it pays off to invest into this field.
Now that's really fascinating. And you brought up a good point, right? It's not just react, but really having the foundation in place, being proactive about it. And take back 20 years ago. So you mentioned this whole initiative started 20 years ago. What's the driver and what's the impetus of establishing Estonia as that digital hub and being what it is today?
Well, Estonia, we started going digital really for the reasons that we've always had to be as efficient, as effective as we can. We are such a small nation. We are 1.3 million people. But still, in our big bad neighborhood, we have to have our defense up. People expect the same level of, you know, welfare than in our neighboring Nordic countries. So my point being, we realize that if you want to be a fully fledged country, we have to use all the resources we have in the best efficient way every day. And so that led us to many reforms in economic policy and in the society. That also led to experiment with digital technologies at a time when internet was just, you know, starting to go mainstream in late 90s. And from these early experiments, it really showed that we can indeed reap the benefits and punch a bit beyond our weight. So it became a conscious strategy for the government and leadership from there on. But the driver has, yes, been that that's our way to basically to be pulled off to being a country these days. And obviously, through the years, the drivers have also become more multifold. So these days, it's also about just meeting people's expectations, isn't it? So our citizens, once they had a taste of being digital, they wanted more. And once we all have more digital in our daily lives these days, then obviously government has to just be in that game. There's no other option anymore.
That's one of the biggest challenges, right? On one hand, you know, I live in Washington, D.C. I think about my consumer experience, my day-to-day life. I buy something online. I can check my shipping, the tracking. I can just go online and compare prices. I'm used to that level of service. But unfortunately, my local government is still not there. Or my, I would even say some parts of my federal government.
Yeah.
That was, it's taking a while, so to speak, for a lot of decisions to be made. So how did you all, I know it's political will is a big part of it.
Sure.
So how was the government convinced this is the way to go and this is the right thing to do?
Well, it's exactly like I hinted. I mean, it was more about just we started at a time where any idea was basically welcome in a sense of how to be more efficient and more effective. And mind you, our biggest drive for digital was at the backdrop of another crisis at the day. So 1997 Asian financial crisis and then the 98 Russian economic crisis. That these two meant that when the government was coming in 99, like history lesson now, I'm sorry. At the time, next government was coming in after elections. They had the dire need to cut back public expenditure and bring in like massive savings program. So basically, a few experiments had been happening on the digital front. That was now a dire need to do even more immediately. And so all these sort of things converged. And so, like I said, any idea was welcome. And so from these first experiments of taking, I don't know, taxation, so making it easy to pay taxes online, bringing in digital signatures so anything can be signed digitally, bringing in a digital entity to access services online. I mean, the first sort of these steps, they prove their value. And you mentioned political will. So that's important to, you know, there has to be will to try stuff. So we had that will to try stuff at least. And once you see it in action, well, then it's a pragmatic choice to do more or want more in a way.
Right.
So that's been sort of the beginning of the story for us. And so I get often asked, like, is there a political debate about being digital in Estonia? No, I mean, not for years now anymore, because everybody has seen and felt it in the practice. So that's why there's sort of very much like a startup way in terms of you start out to try stuff out, you scale from that. That's been our journey.
I mean, you talk about growth mindset, right?
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. It's fail fast, fail forward, and keep iterating. So
Oh, yes. It's
fascinating how that model, another country I can think of is Singapore too, that they have their own ways of innovation as well. Today, 99% of your public services are online. So can you kind of describe what it's like a day in the life in Estonia? Because I can't even imagine 99% public services are online.
Well, the thing is, I mean, honestly, in our daily lives anywhere, we don't come across government that often, do we? So let's say on average in Estonia as well, a person comes across some sort of government interaction a few times a year. On average, of course, if you have the accident of, you know, falling sick, or if you're an entrepreneur, you might have more things to do in terms of red tape. And so it depends on who you are. But fundamentally, we spend more time still in, you know, online banking or social media and the other stuff. So that's one thing. But at the times you do have to come across government, then literally almost anything you can do yourself online from a distance and so on. The only exceptions are, and it sounds like a joke, but it's actually true, to get married and divorced, you still have to show up for. So we could even do that from a distance, but in a way, well, there's tradition involved. And secondly, legally speaking, if I take all the romance away from getting married, so legally speaking, this is the most consequential thing you can do in your life, right? So even with a prenup, we want to make sure you really know you're doing. You're not being coerced into marriage, for example. So you have to see somebody at least. But look, long story short, so any application for some benefit, anything as an entrepreneur you need to do in terms of reporting to the government to ensure compliance and with the rules, anything else like that, anything happens in your life, the stuff you have to come across with in terms of bureaucracy, that can be done digitally and by yourself.
Hello, Shift Happens podcast listeners. I have an exciting offer for you. Join us for our in-person Shift Happens conference, October 10 to 11 in Washington, D.C. Registration is free. That's right, it's free. And you'll walk away with actionable strategies from industry leaders and peers to make Shift happen in your digital workplace. Visit shifthappens.to to register today. We'll see you there.
So like permits, driver's license renewal,
all that,
you know, like paying taxes, obviously, all that passport application.
Literally, any transaction you would have, any interaction you would need to have. The taxes is especially a fun thing for myself, having lived in the States, especially. We didn't even know what checks are because you know, we were able to go straight to online banking in our case. What's been always weird for us, I couldn't get my head around it. Say, who is it? What do tax accountants do? And I'm going to sound like bragging. No, I don't want to sound like that. But my point is that so we've managed to make it easy to get taxes done. And so basically getting your, let's say as an individual, the taxes are a 3-minute thing.
What?
Once a year. So basically, there's a difference with the American setting in one aspect of things. So in our case, your employer pays the taxes as they pay your salary. So the data in terms of what you earned, what was collected, I mean, that is there on a running basis. So at the end of the year, if I have to do my taxes, the data is just presented back to me. And so unless I have, let's say, foreign income or something, let's say, special case like that, then 95% people don't change anything in their tax declaration. They just basically go online, review it, next, submit, done.
Confirm it, yeah.
And that's an example of we could have just put the form online and still asked to submit all the data, but we figured out, we could actually transform, as the buzzword goes, digital transformation. We could transform how the process works with the help of digital tools. And that's what makes it powerful.
You just remind me, it's tax season here. And that's the most dreaded, the most dreaded activity I do every year. But you're exactly right, because the data is everywhere. You're right. My employer, they file with the government, so they have that piece of data.
Yeah.
And somehow I would need to take that and refill it in some form and submit it elsewhere. My banking data is there. It's just, you know, one argument could be is for PII, personal information, but I'm sure there's ways to secure that as well.
Well, there's a ways of securing it. That, and secondly, well, in Estonia, we operate based on a few principles. One of them is once only, which means that if some board of government knows something about you already, the rest should not ask again.
Mm.
So if, let's say, your taxes have been reported already, especially the tax agency, the same agency, should not ask again. So that's a legal principle to follow. But second, it's the data can be reused often by default if a law permits for that. My point being that oftentimes countries do it this way, that you have to opt in. You have to specifically consent for the data to be used. In our case, we can opt out. If I don't like my data to be used, I can still opt to basically submit all my data to the tax agency again.
Got it.
But almost nobody does, because the convenience is just so great of not doing it. So which was just my point of saying that even with the privacy stuff, if you're really concerned, you could always have the option of not, right, having an easy tax declaration, but at least have an opt-in. So basically at least give people the chance of having that would be my message.
And I assume this is true with healthcare as well, right? So when they see their doctor, go to hospitals.
Of course.
Again, you don't have to keep filling the form 10,000 times if every time you visit to a different doctor.
Absolutely. And I think it comes especially necessary at the times when you have to be treated in different health systems, or let's say emergency need especially.
Mm.
Like in Estonian case, we have since 2007, so that's 15 years now, digital health history. Built up. So each time I go to see a doctor, there's a trace of that that ends up being part of my sort of, let's say, national file, so to speak. And that is available for me, obviously, and for the next doctor I go to see. And so it saves time. It can allow for better treatment. There's data to build preventive medicine on. I mean, all the sort of, you know, benefits that you unlock like that. But you're right. I mean, the privacy has to be protected. But first of all, we're part of Europe. So the whole infamous GDPR and everything applies. But secondly, we also have taken care to really build in the features of personal data management. So let's take healthcare, possibly my most sensitive data. I have a granular view who accesses that, which doctor looked into my files. If police looked into my, I don't know, records somewhere, then I have a log file that I can see it from, and I can then, you know, start an investigation or have it started by the data protection office. And so I have control in terms of what happens to my stuff. And by the way, I can even block the next doctor to see my past if I want to. So there are this very small, actually very simple technical solutions that are very powerful to give you the, assure you the trust.
Got it. No, that's fantastic. So there's really an audit trail and history of who looked at it, who edited it, who updated it, etc.
Absolutely. And I mean, in our information systems, the log file is there anyway. We just made it public for you. So not public for everyone, but for you about your data.
Right. It's security trend, right?
Yeah.
So along that line, so let's say, you know, I'm so enamored by what y'all are doing. I decide, you know what, I'm going to move to Estonia. So how would someone like me who's new in society get plugged into this digital society?
As soon as you basically move actually here, then you get you become a Estonian resident. So and with that, if not a citizen, if you like that. So you get a digital identity, which means that at least an ID card, with basically like a smart chip card, like a bank card, or also like a mobile ID. So either way, you will have a key to access all the services online. And by this point, almost all the services available in English language, for example, as well. But the good news for you is that you don't even have to move. You can virtually become Estonian even by being in DC or wherever in the world. So we have this program called e-residency. So you can become virtual resident of Estonia. You get the same key and you can, let's say, set up a company from a distance. And that means running a European company from the comfort of your home or your office, wherever in the world. And signing things, setting up, let's say, doing deals with partners. I mean, all that sort of stuff. So my point being that we're talking about a digital world, digital services, and in digital, we don't have to physically have you with us, actually, to have you with us, so to speak.
So in that scenario, I mean, that's awesome. But how do you prevent it from being used maliciously?
There's a few things. Well, first of all, we are very blunt about one thing. Like, there's no way you can 100% prevent bad things happening. Like, we can even, you know, never have that. I mean, there's never going to be 100% secure systems, for example, either, right? When you talked about cybersecurity before. So stuff can happen. And you just have to basically build up your defenses and your mechanisms for that as strong as you can. With e-residency, there's a few things. We check heavily the backgrounds of the people that apply. So if there's any suspicion that you may not be up to good, you don't get to become e-resident. Secondly, any suspicion we have that you do bad stuff, immediately we stop and, you know, investigate to close the stuff. So you can even lose access to your company that you set up, for example.
Or you get banned from the country permanently, right?
And that's the third thing, not from the country. Estonia is a member of European Union, of NATO. You end up in all the blacklists everywhere, basically.
Oh, wow.
So these are the sort of, let's say, control mechanisms or the safeguards in a place like that. But because of them, very honestly, we get a few bad apples, but just very few. So we have 90,000 e-residents through the years now. And just literally a few cases of people misusing it. And just to give you context, I think 90,000 may sound much, but again, we're a country of 1.3 million people. So for us, before the, let's say, COVID times now, each week we had more virtual residents joining than the babies born in the country.
Oh, wow. So I'm sure there's a lot of information out there and we'll share that. But what are the key benefits of being an e-resident? Do they become Estonian citizen or EU citizen? How does that work?
So you don't become a citizen, you don't even get a visa, but this is really your key to do stuff in digital space. So you get the identity, you get access to the services we provide. For example, setting up and running your company from a distance.
Got it.
It's a digital passport, think about it this way. So to really enter our digital service space that the Estonian government has built up. But the company, for example, you run is a European company. So the use cases, the benefits are around a few things. If you're from outside Europe, and you want to be trusted as a partner in European single market, that's one of the best ways to have that. You don't need to set up in another country where the bureaucracy is bigger or, you know, where you have to pay some middlemen to hold your company in some registry. You can just fully do it yourself from wherever you are. And the second big sort of use case is there's more and more people, even with COVID times, we see that roam the world. Digital nomads, as they're called as well, right? So people who choose the location where it's best to be currently, they are usually often professional in professional service area, whether they are, you know, coder or designer or consultant or whatever like that. They need some jurisdiction base to operate from, to send the invoices from. And that's where e-residence is so handy.
And you actually have a digital nomad visa, right? You launch in at the height of COVID. So can you talk more about
yes.
that and what benefits these digital nomads would have other than the invoice capabilities?
So digital nomad visa plays to the same trend, but a bit differently. Digital nomad visa was one of the first attempts, I think, in the world to basically say to all those guys and girls who want to exactly change locations and to travel the world while working that, hey, consider Estonia as one of the stops on your way.
Mm.
And with the hope being that if you come here, then our ecosystem, for example, for startups, can actually perhaps attract you to stay longer. So it's a way to try to attract entrepreneurs and new business to the country. It, just like you said, it coincided, or let's say COVID happened at the time when this was rolling out. So it was like longer planned from our point of view. But so the numbers have not been that great, but still like a few hundred folks have come in. And so it's as soon as sort of COVID's done, we see that interest is high, but people are just not moving enough yet.
We talked about COVID. I'm sure when COVID came in, obviously Estonia was pretty ready because the country is very digital. Any major change as how you delivered services during COVID?
Yes, still. Well, first of all, indeed, we were ready from some point. So as all the services have been available, and for example, public sector operates digitally, then switching to remote work or remote study, or, you know, that was not that much of a deal. Just only a few things perhaps had to stop, so getting married was a bit halted for a bit of time. But a few things still emerged. So first of all, I mean, COVID, every crisis brings its own specific needs.
Mm.
So for example, with COVID, I mean, stuff like, how do you manage now suddenly protective, personal protective gear?
That's true.
On a national level. And so do you have stocks for that? So building this sort of management system up was an immediate need. Or to get the data flowing from COVID labs to national statistics and how to do COVID contact tracing. I mean, these specific needs emerged. And we had to solve for them, obviously, like together with everyone else. So we did... we did what we always done in a way, tried to rely on good partnerships with private sector and be very open in this sort of innovation. I think it was a Thursday, 2 years ago almost now, when the first restrictions ever came in Estonia on Friday. So the next day we started a hackathon to come up with solutions now and to, you know, start to build up the solutions and services and the tech we needed to deal with the crisis that we had at hand. And so some of the first things came from that, like you know, even simple things like a chatbot for crisis information or pandemic information. So that's one thing. So we had to quickly fix certain solutions. And secondly, well, quite frankly, it also exposed where we haven't been as strong at. Let's say COVID vaccine registration on national level showed us that, you know, we have our weak spots in how digital health, for example, works in some areas, and so what we need to strengthen. So we've had also our sort of stuff to deal with. It's never not been like picture perfect, but that's good because that makes you resilient for the next stuff. So now, having been through COVID, for example, dealing with the current crisis, we're so much more resilient that we have even more sort of, let's say, cyber safety again, and etc. And so what I hope that the last 2 years and sort of, let's say, crisis after crisis have sort of added to Estonian digital journey is we have now even better understanding of how to really put in place the stuff for resilience, for resilience on society level. So basically, whatever next comes your way, how to quickly be able to react to that, and what building blocks of stuff you need in place in cybersecurity, in your digital infrastructure, to be ready for whatever comes your way.
You know, based on how you're describing this, Sim, it reminds me of the Kaizen approach, the continuous improvement, right? So you lay the groundwork and then you continue to build upon it. You test it. If it works, great. If it doesn't, okay, let's iterate. That sounds like the model the country has specific to digital transformation.
Well, I'll be honest, it's a bit fancier, you know, in said than done.
Sounds good, right? Yeah.
Yes, exactly. On a daily level, we have our own sort of, you know, frictions that the Kaizen doesn't work perfectly. At least that's the aspiration. So that's how we always try to at least sort of make the government work, like, or that's what we work for.
So what we just talked about, right? Well, certainly you apply it to a whole country. Frankly, it applies to a private company as well, any other business as well. So
of course,
as the most digitally advanced country in the world, your leaders in digital transformation, what advice would you provide, be it countries or companies who's really seriously thinking about transforming how they work, how they do business, how they run their country, especially in this new normal?
I think, well, there are many things we can sort of share, but I think if I had to trim down to three things, for example, and they're going to sound perhaps a bit cliche, but hear me out. Well, the buzzword that we're talking about in this sort of business is digital transformation. We're digitally transforming how society or government or company works. But that fundamentally means that it's actually not a technology problem we are solving.
Mm.
And technology is the same globally everywhere, but it depends on how we use it. And so in order to for the stuff to work, we just have to properly do the change management. And that's a mindset thing. So about how the leaders have to approach it. But that's also a lot of, let's say, classic routine practices. You have to communicate stuff. You have to get stakeholders on board. I mean, it's like, you know, ABC of change management that often is not done in sort of people just treat it as technology uptake projects. And that never works. So that's the thing, that it's like you have to manage this transformation as a change. And the third thing, and perhaps it's like perhaps the most Estonian thing, is that, you know, collaborate, be open. So especially in Estonia, we've been keenly aware that we will never have the best minds of the world necessarily. And we will never have the best minds of the country, even in government. But we have to work with private sector. We use open source a lot for that matter. So, you know, the global best solutions in a way. We don't have any shame in copying others if something works elsewhere, taking it up from there. So this is my point of saying that it doesn't have to be rocket science. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to do digital stuff. You just have to be really open and partner up and stuff like that. And then magic can happen.
You know, that's a very important point, because oftentimes when people think digital transformation, then people would think about we need to do AI. We need to do, you know, Kubernetes, or we got to start doing cyber currency. But
yeah,
there's a lot of low hanging fruits that we can go after.
Absolutely. And by the way, I mean, this is another sort of good topic in a way. Government solutions, at least, are not necessarily high tech or, you know, sort of state of the art, sort of bleeding edge technology wise, but it's stuff that sort of is put to work. And a lot of it comes down really, a lot of it comes down to the process design. So like we spoke about tax before, okay? So an online tax form that's pre-filled is not based on AI at this point. It can be, of course, but why? It doesn't have to be. The power of that and the effect of that for, let's say, government or even, let's say, your personal efficiency comes from how we design the process and the service behind, really to be, and from user's point of view, it's user-centric. So this is my point of saying that design matters way more than the tech in this game.
Well, Sim, this is a fantastic conversation. I'm sure a lot of our listeners have gained a lot of knowledge and wisdom. And if folks want to connect with you, what's the best way to reach you?
Well, as an Estonian, then we are very easy to find online, myself included. So whether it's social media or otherwise, just hit me up. Well, these days, exactly, we work with, as I left government just recently, then we work with governments and organizations from around the world. So really happy to share what we think we have learned.
Well, again, Sim, thank you so much for your time. And thank you, everybody, for tuning into another Shift Happens episode. Until the next time, stay safe.
Shift Happens Podcast.
Thanks for listening. Today, we got a glimpse of what life could look like if 99% of our government services were digitized. I don't know about you, but I wouldn't mind doing my taxes in minutes. More importantly, we learned the technology doesn't have to be cutting edge or ultra modern to make a difference. As Sim says, technology is the same everywhere. It depends on how you use it. Worry less about how high tech your solutions are and more about how simple your process is for using them. After all, the true power of technology is usability. So remember, be open, partner with others, and just begin. If you like today's episode, please leave a review for the Shift Happens podcast on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you use to listen. We'll see you next time.
Shift Happens Podcast. Shift Happens Podcast.
Shift Happens Podcast is a production of AppPoint, Inc., produced and edited by the AppPoint brand team. Stay up to date on the latest trends in digital workplace transformation by visiting AppPoint.com.